James.
Hey, man.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
You know, this is the great goal of anybody, really, should be to be on the That Pitch podcast. I mean, it's the biggest thing that could happen in it, as you know.
That's
this,
it.
This is the goal. You have an English accent. You are an. How is it there? You're on the. Talk to me.
Yeah.
What are you witnessing?
People are making, well, people in charge are making some bad choices. I mean, I don't get involved in it that much, but, you know, I think it would just be nice to have people who are compassionate and are doing stuff for the people who got them there. That's all I'll say. That's all we need.
Too much. There was a thing that I was listening to NPR. This was fucking hilarious. I think it was Boris Johnson who said this. He was like talking about the new prime minister and like, I don't know, there's a book, there's something, it's called like Out by Christmas. Is that the time or when their term is over or something like that? There's so many new prime ministers coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like my son has almost seen like more prime ministers than I have in my lifetime.
That makes no sense. I remember growing up, you know, in our limited education on UK's politics that is taught in America, as the American school system is. It's all about us, unfortunately. At least I'm aware. But all I remember is Tony Blair. That's all. It's just Tony Blair.
For the longest
time, Tony Blair.
The Blair years, yep.
Tony. And then past, you know, it's Crazyville. So I'm glad you're hanging in tight.
Yeah, we're here. We're getting it done. They come and go.
So that's the best thing in most countries. That's the best thing about it. Yeah, they come and go. That itself is a luxury, isn't it?
That's it. You got to take that.
Right. Speaking of politics, you don't live in London. You live in a smaller town in England. I love talking about the remote music industry, kind of just, you know, all of us being in our studios and like random far-flung places around the earth. I think it's super cool and everybody has their own vibe of how they kind of pursue everything. You landed a placement with us this month. I want to talk about where you live, the music scene, what you do, your upbringing, everything. First, where are you?
Yeah, so I'm in New Haven, which is a small kind of fishing town. We've got a port, very sort of port heavy town. Yeah. So, you know, it's seen, you know, times of struggle, but it's on the up and up now. It's getting some money and the art scene is kind of coming back now. People are converting high street shops into art galleries and displaying art, and there's community art projects coming back. So
that's awesome.
Actually, it's like an exciting place to live as an artist because I'm starting to feel less like when I first moved here, I'm like, okay, well, there's me. And, you know, as I'm meeting more people, I'm like, actually, there are other people doing similar kind of things or acting or making films who are nearby. And I think it's really important. I love working remote, but it's also important to have like locally to you. I think people you can vibe off of, chat to and just jam with or do whatever you need to do to kind of fill your kind of art soul.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be the first to say, like, although I like being in the remote industry and like being able to do whatever, whenever, from wherever. I do like having my scene. Like there's nothing that beats a local scene. Like I can live in like a tier two or tier three city. Personally, it's hard for me to imagine me living like out in the country or something. Some friends thrive in those scenarios. But you know, it's all relative. It's like, if you got your crew, if you got a scene, you know, you kind of start getting some local pride. Like, So I live in Charlotte and there's this one neighborhood called Plaza. And that's like the grungy, shitty, like, well, now like all things, it's getting gentle. but it's like where everybody like cut their teeth in these shitty clubs that smell like piss. And there's just like great tracks coming out of there. Everything sounds distorted, not because they love distortion because their amp is broken. Like, it's good. Yeah.
You got to work with what you got to work with.
Yeah. But the cool thing about like smaller towns and like smaller cities is, you know, people, in my opinion, make, you know, and this has just been in my my experience, but like if you're in a very sexy city where everybody thinks you're cool just because you live there and it's really expensive and all this stuff, you end up spending all of your time just trying to make rent. And at the same time, you already feel successful because you live there. So a lot of times you don't even try as hard.
That's it.
Whereas if you're in a smaller town, it's cheaper. You're not trying to make it. You're just making good shit. And like, you
yeah, that's it. That's exactly why we moved, because we wanted to own a property rather than rent. And we were just like, we need somewhere that's got a good school for the boy. That's somewhere we can afford, live comfortably, and kind of pursue the things that we want to pursue, because ultimately we're going to be happier doing that than chasing this kind of rat race thing, just constantly trying to make more money to make more money. And, you know, moving out here has been one of the best things that we ever kind of did.
That's amazing, man. It's the, they call, I heard recently, it's called the rise of the rest. It's everybody who's not in like the sexy cities necessarily, not New York, not LA, not London. It's like all these other towns and cities where there's incredible records coming out of, really cool labels, publishers. And they actually, like, if you look historically, like from an economy, you know, originally England outsourced everything to America. America got too expensive, you know, then America started outsourcing everything to Japan. Japan got too expensive. And then it became China. Now it's Southeast Asia. It's like, it's just, it just goes
keeps around. Going and working
it
back.
Keeps going around. Nothing's personal. It just keeps going around the world to wherever's going to be cheapest, because if something is being done in a cheap place, it's more competitive and you can generally make amazing things happen that you otherwise couldn't in a more expensive place. So that's how I'm looking at the music economy, is like right now. And I know this is your interview, but this is exciting. I like talking about
it. No, go for it.
Like, you know, the music industry was original. I mean, London and New York. And then, you know, LA started popping up. Nashville started popping up. Toronto, Berlin. And then it's like the next phases. Now we have like Grammy nominated artists in Charlotte, of all places. And like Detroit had Motown. So like all these, you know, there's like rappers coming up out of Sacramento. You know, like it's just, it's all over.
Well,
And that's like the beauty in it is if you look at a place and say, oh, there's not much going on here. If you also look at it and be like, oh my God, there's not much going on. I can be the thing that's going on here. Everybody's
gonna
be, right?
That's it. Straight up.
So you have a badass tape machine in the back. Do you have a history of working in studios?
No, I mean, that was my grandfather's. I mean, he worked for banks in the UK.
Okay.
And, he was involved in all kinds of finances and financing things, even at Abbey Road.
Really?
And my mum used to do some babysitting for George Martin up at Abbey Road back in the good days.
What? And,
so like my family history with like that kind of stuff is, you know, it's good, but I mean, he was really into music and making recordings. Like I have tape, reels of tape that are like my mum doing a music recital when she was young. I've got reels of tape where my grandma, she was really into opera, and he would, you know, on the radio and record like her favorite opera for her so she could play it back.
Aww.
And he, for him, like music, massive, massive thing. And then when my grand passed away last year, she'd saved it and it came to me with all the kind of tape, which was really lovely. But yeah, I mean, I started out as a teacher. Like I went to uni, I went to music uni. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I kind of had this thing, and I think we all suffer from it, where I just like didn't really believe in myself. I was studying arranging orchestration, but I was like, nah, there's only going to be like one or two people that picked. I'm not one of those people.
Right.
I know I can talk to people. I'll go into teaching. There's money there. That's probably going to work.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I loved it. But then I realized it's not what I wanted to be doing. And what I had started doing was like, I suddenly realized, oh, I'm having loads of kids turn up to orchestra and band and jazz band. And it's because I'm writing these kids are like coming to me saying, oh, can we play this? Can we play that? And I'm pumping out these great arrangements that really work. And crowds are loving, the kids are loving it. Maybe I should go back to doing this stuff. And one thing leads to another. And it's, I don't know, it seems to always be the way for me. A friend basically rings me up and is like, I'm doing music prep for this big project for Creative Assembly, who do video games at the moment. And he's like, we're really tight. Like, the person who was supposed to do the music prep didn't. The studio's booked in 2 days' time. Yeah. We need all the orchestral parts done. I know you can do this. Can you come on board and help me make this happen? Because this could be like our foot in the door here. This could be a good thing. Let's go. And it's basically come. That's how it started.
That's amazing. Well, it's the saying, it's success comes when you're ready. You know, so you were prepared. You had everything all good to go. You just needed somebody to ask for the favor. And then boom, that's literally what happened with me in Sync, man. Is like, I just made I was friends with a bunch of people. I was confident, was just like really, really busy. And one day they just asked for help. Bada bing, bada boom. Now I'm the guy.
That's it. Yep. It's that push. And then I kind of realized, okay, I need to write more now to improve what I'm doing and understand what people want. And I love film, and I'm lucky enough to work on some films at the moment, which is great. And I realized quickly, I couldn't give the kids what they needed and do this. So I was like, okay, you gotta go, kids. Sorry. So I did something completely crazy, and I took a job in a really, really rundown hotel. I took the night job. I basically took a night manager's job. And I basically, this is how it worked out. I figured, if I take this job, no one goes in this hotel. I'm basically sat here for 8 hours a night. I can write whatever I want. I can read what I want. I can watch videos. I can learn. Like, and I'm getting paid to do this. Yeah, they're probably going to be really annoyed that I've, like, if anyone sees this now, they're going to be like, oh my God, no, I knew it. He never did anything.
You're getting paid to babysit. I get it. That's awesome.
But I was like, that's what I need now. I just need time to work out, you know, I'm used to dealing with other people's themes and taking other people's stuff and writing extra stuff. I need time now to just go back to and just get really comfortable with just writing, you know, and being able to do different styles and different things and do that. And that's what happened. And then, since then, I've kind of been really lucky to chat to people, meet people and fall into things and have some really amazing kind of collaborators and clients to work with that keeps me full time. And the best thing I have to say, as well as the music, the best thing is I get to be a dad.
Yep.
You know, that's awesome. Every morning I get to see the boy, I get to take him to school, I get to pick him up from school, see how he is, take him to this, take him to that, because I can do that. And I think where I've been honest with all my clients and said, you know, I am a family guy. That's how I work. Whatever I'm doing works around that. It's been really nice as well. And that's kind of worked for them. Lots of them understand and kind of resonate with that vibe. And I think the happier you are in your personal life, even better for me. Everything flows.
The biggest myth I think nowadays is you have to struggle to make good art. It's just not like, I mean, and even if it was, it's not worth it. Like I think growing up being in the music industry, wanting to pursue music, you know, you are trained on the goal of what your future should look like, you know, and if we kind of go back to my early days at the studio, like just interning or like touring, you know, playing with people and whatever it was, if we had gone through like the external expectations versus what internally I really wanted, the external was, you know, eventually you're going to be doing coke. You're going to be cheating on any girl that you date. Personal life is going to be a fucking train wreck. Everyone's going to hate end up alone, but you're going to have a shitload of money for a short period of time. And then eventually you're going to become some sort of spiritual guru. Because that's how it all ends. So I didn't want to go through that. but, you know, I kind of learned like, all right, you know, I think and you probably experienced this yourself, the best education you can get is by experiencing something yourself and then objectively 100%. Looking at it. Like I realized, so like I started out as a drummer primarily, and I was MDing for artists. So I'd like run the shows. That is what got me really into production because I could run Ableton. People would be like, hey, do you want to work on my records? And then I was like, oh, then I had some mentors that produced full time and it just made a lot more sense to me. And so what I kind of realized once I was like producing more and I could like step back from drumming, not take a break, but just like look at it from a 30,000 foot view, I kind of realized to myself, this was a very hard realization because, you know, drumming was my life. I loved drumming for artists that I was working with personally on a record that I was a part of and playing very specific kinds of venues. Or I liked playing like, you know, jazz jams with my friends. I didn't like being flown out for a spot date. I didn't like having to drive somewhere far. Just like I wouldn't even see the city. You know, like being on, there's a joke. Yeah. It's like being on tour is like looking at Walmart parking lots for a month, you know? So yeah. Like, you know, so I realized I loved playing and touring in a very specific environment for a specific reason, but drumming itself, just like playing, I didn't have this emotional attachment. It was more of a medium in which it was a tool in which I could experience a very specific scene. And if I wasn't experiencing that, maybe this like wasn't exactly what I wanted out of it. And that was so hard to realize. And people just like don't take into account whatever your passion is, or it needs like you being a dad, being an awesome, you know, like your passion should support the life that you want. Your life should not support.
That's it. It's like the whole, from when you first talk about careers and stuff at school, I think it's all wrong. Like you don't.
Yeah.
There's never, it's all like, no, you're going to learn these skills so that you can get a job. There's not so much thought about, well, you could be the entrepreneur. You could be
right.
The job. And then you can make choices and decisions. And this is how you support that. You know,
yeah.
It's the same as music. Like our music lessons, okay, we got to do practical stuff, which is great. That's more than some people got. Right. But our like view of stuff was like, okay, so basically if you're going to do music, you're going to be a performer.
Right.
That's it. There was no like real talk about like writing or anything like that. You're going to be a performer. And don't get me wrong, I really loved that. That was, you know, that was a cool space and it was great to do that stuff. But I think if you were to see that back, you think to yourself, you'd see something different as a kid. I was like, oh man, I'd have done this years ago.
Rather than
now, if I knew this existed, but I had to kind of find out for myself that this existed.
And that's the thing is like, I don't knock on when people kind of shit talk various like routes you can choose in music without having done it themselves, but you can tell if someone is expressing something based off of envy versus actual experience. You know, there's certain things in my career in music that I am moving towards that once I get there, I don't know if I'm going to love it or hate it, but there's certain things like, you know, even with that pitch, because after drumming, my main thing for the next, you know, half decade to a decade was like, I was the indie pop synth pop producer. And that kind of led me, I was really just building an independent thing remote that brought me to like interlabel stuff and sync stuff. And then, so that's primarily what I'm doing. But I know if I really enjoyed those things, if I hadn't experienced all of this, because I think every stage in your life, you're really just figuring out like, what do I like about this? And what do I hate? And the problem that you and I have probably noticed in a lot of friends is they get to a place where, you know, they're not happy. It's not supporting the life that would actually be healthy for them that they actually want, but their ego is so attached to this identity of, I need to be this. This is what I am, fucking rock star or whatever. And like, dude, like you don't have to do that. I just got lucky early on that I had people 10 years, 20 years older than, and I saw what their leads looked like versus like, you know, what it said on paper, you know? So it's like, I think if you're observant, you can start design of stuff.
Yeah. And you don't have to settle. It's like
right,
you said,
right.
it's continual. It's not going to stop now. Like I'm not going to stop here and be like, this is where I'm at. I'm now, you know, I'm here and I'm thinking about, okay, well, what would I want to do next? What haven't I done? Like some of the best things I've done have been like, you know, when people have said to me, we want a soundtrack that's like this. This is not what you do, but we really like what you do.
Right.
And we think you could do this. And then that challenge, and you're like, okay, yeah, I can. I can rise to this. I can do this. It's, you know, it's good. I think someone once said to me this, and I thought this is just silly, but, you know, it's good to be uncomfortable. Like you hear people saying that all the time, but actually it really is, because that's when you find out if that's for you or that's not for you, or it just sends you to that next place that you just need to be at.
Well, that's kind of, you know, I realized that with drumming, you know, at that point, if you look at like the progression of my career of like, you know, I was the drummer, then I was the MD, then I was the indie pop synth pop producer, then I was like the major label producer, and at the same time became the sync guy, and now I'm like the sync music business publishing music licensing guy, and people forget that I produce or drum. So like it's this weird thing where like everybody else starts kind of trying to tell you what you are too, and it really just came down to like, in a way, like what were considered the next career steps in drumming for what I enjoyed in drumming. I didn't really like, I don't care to learn, you know, Afro-Cuban drumming. Like, I it scares the shit out of me. Like, I don't want to learn how to play 2-3 clave with my left foot and then, like, you know, like, and do all this ridiculous shit. Like, I can't do it, and I wouldn't even get the gigs because, like, I'm not in with those crews. Like, I would be terrible, like, you know? And so that was the next set. And then production, it's like, I really just enjoy producing like indie pop, synth pop, some hip hop. And that's it. Like, I don't want to work on a massive rock or country record or something. I also don't like, I've achieved more in production than I thought I would. And I cared to. So like, it's like, okay, what's the next step? Like, this is really cool. Like, I love that pitch. I love publishing. I love music licensing. And I think like, because I'm still going to be producing, but it's like, this is like, okay, like this is like a new challenge for, like, cause I entered it so green, you know, and same thing for like when you got into like kind of your current, yeah, what you're doing, it's like you enter so green and you're like, wow, there's so many things I can do.
Yeah. You know? And that's it. And I think it's once you've, and I think in terms of what I do, which is a lot of film stuff, it's amazing. About,
yeah,
it's about trust. Like, if you, yes, prove to one person you can be trusted with this story, this thing, their art that they want to put out there. Once you've proven that a couple of times, I think it's the same with Sync. I was chatting to someone today about something.
It's all the same. Yeah. Just,
and it's just once you've proven that trust that they can go, okay, you do that and you can, yeah, deliver that. They just, that's when it starts. It's almost like, for me, it was like suddenly a tidal wave of people,
yeah,
emailing and people suddenly responding to me. If I emailed them, if I did the dreaded like cold email them, suddenly getting a,
right,
oh yeah, man, that we've heard, you know, and it's fine. Even just, awesome, to the point where, rather than no reply, they're just replying and go, oh yeah, we've heard your stuff. We like what you're doing. You know, all the best to you. It's just not for, yeah, us right now. Like, and that's good. And that tells you exactly kind of, you know, where you're at.
Yeah. The industry in general is like built off of trust. I feel like for our, you know, all the licensing companies that we work with in that pitch, they trust our legal compliance and, yeah, like our taste and our team and our delivery of assets and metadata first, and then they also trust that the music is really great in that.
Yeah, that's it. They you know, it's exactly the same thing. I was saying someone the other day with things is, you've just got to come in. I see it so many times on like a project group or something that you get included to as a composer, and there's a like problem with something.
Right.
It's not necessarily your department, but you're seeing a problem blow up, and there's like people are just like, well, you know, we could, yeah, and you're just like, just solve the problem. If, yep, you solve that problem right then, right now, that's that. They're coming back to you. They're coming back for more.
Dude, I feel like we're the same exact person because, like, so I was talking to my buddy Elliot this morning. He owns this company called DeNovo Agency. They do music marketing in the industry, and he's great guy. And I texted him this because I'm sending someone his way that originally wanted to work with me, and I said, hey, I'm not the best for this kind of gig, but you should, you know, chat with my buddy Elliot. And I said to him, I was like, the thing I appreciate about you regarding marketing, like running ads, building, you know, streams, like building playlists, whatever. The thing I like about your process is you make all of this so fucking boring. It is so unsexy. There's no hype at all. It's just, yeah, you know, this is, here are the three pillars that, you know, would probably make up this. Here's a couple things you can do for each. And you want to try this and that. That doesn't work. Probably move to this. It's just like, it's like a fucking,
there's no PowerPoint drama.
It's like a PowerPoint presentation. Right. And that's like, for music, the way that I look at that pitch is like, every single song is a house. You can rent it out, you know, you can sell it, whatever you want. That pitch is the property management. That's how I look at all of this. It's so boring. Control. And I love it, you know? So let me ask you, so, you know, you kind of built trust into a lot of these different filmmakers, and tell me about that. Like, how has that all been, your experience with that? Any, you said you had like that first deal and that kind of like opened the doors for some other, yeah, stuff. Were you actively trying to get connected with people, or did, yeah, you start reaching out? How'd that all go? How did, yeah, you leverage, I mean, that situation? Cause that's a big thing, is leveraging a really cool thing. That
I mean, I figured, early on, I figured, okay, I'm not going to get much time with experienced people unless someone's going to take a like real, they either like want to take a real long shot gamble, or they've got a like ridiculously low budget. So they're going to like lowball, right, this to whoever brings the lowest. So I was just like, well, I'm sat here, I'm getting paid in the hotel So why don't I go find some student directors and just say to them,
okay,
send me your stuff. I want to practice on it. Whether you use it or not, that's up to you. Just understand that if you use it, goes to festivals or whatever, I own it. I'll license the music to you. You know, so yeah. Everything I'm making, if something does ever happen,
and,
you know.
And I bet you it was a handshake deal, super chill, right?
Yeah. You know.
Just make it easy as possible. Just shoot
and that's
shot.
It. Yep. And I met a guy called Chaz Harrington who, and I mean, you're going to hear this guy because I did two films with him in the end, two short films, one called Happy Man, which starred Andrew Lathwaite, who later went on to be in Gangs of London series one over here. And the other one called Pony, which is it's quite dark, quite funny little short film about death and gambling, which is interesting.
Oh, love it.
The reason I backed him, because I had a few, was just that this guy was like, he was at peak doing what he was doing. And I was like, okay, I want to be doing peak doing what I'm doing. So if we go together, one, my music's going to come off sounding really good and I'm going to get really good looking reel to send to other people. Two, I'm really helping him out. And three, I'm going to learn something decent from this. And, you know, we talk all the time still now. And it's not, we became friends over it and we still chat, we check in. He's working now as an assistant director on all kinds of like huge things as he like wakes his way in it as well. And, you know, I would love, he knows because we talk about it all the time that when he does do the next thing that he's doing, because he's writing books, he's doing all kinds of stuff, that he knows that I'm here for him. If he wants my style of music there, he knows that I can do that. And that's how it goes. And then that's what happened. And then the big feature film break that I got, because that was then my next thing. I want to go from shorts. I want to get a feature. I want to be trusted with the whole thing. My brother-in-law is an actor and a martial arts specialist. He was in a movie and basically I was like, I'm going to do a cheeky thing. Look, just if you happen to get talking, you like music. If you're talking to directors, whatever, just name drop me. I know it's cringy, but name drop me. And he did. And when I saw him talking about this film, I saw a director and I cold dropped the director and just said, hey, this is what I'm doing. I really like the look of what you're doing. I like the pictures. This is the kind of thing. Look, I'm here. And we got talking and we literally realized that he used to live down the road that I live on now. And he literally lives in the next village over. And this guy was nominated for a BAFTA for his script writing.
What?
So then I was like, okay, we got another like serious. This is okay. You know, don't panic. Just say what you would do. And I said to him, because it was quite big and he didn't know really what he wanted. I said to him, just give me something from the script, something juicy from the script, and let my brain go loose on this. And he gave me the opening monologue. So 6 years gone is a story. It's a gut-wrenching thriller. It's out on Amazon now and Tubi and various other places. Wow. It tells a story of a mum whose daughter was abducted. And, in a normal detective drama, we'd look at the abduction and the crime guys trying to solve it. And we'd find out if it's a good or happy ending. This doesn't. This looks at what happens to the mum 6 years after that's happened. Where's she at? What answers does she want to get? What is emotionally she struggling with? So it's this incredible story. And Veronica Jean Trickett plays the lead. And I mean, she's won so many awards for this movie at various festivals. I think there's 15 awards at the moment for best film and best actress and all this and that and the other.
That's amazing.
And he just gave me this monologue and I wrote this piece. And the next thing I know, he's sending it back to me. He's going, I phoned Veronica. I got Veronica to record the monologue over the top of what you're doing. And he was like, it is the source. Let's work together. Let's go.
That's awesome.
Let's do it. And that's what I love. I don't know. I seem to work best on films if I get a script before and I can spend some time thinking about it. Sometimes it just doesn't work out that way because there's not time. Yeah. But
or sometimes it's just not a fit, which is okay too. You gotta always shoot your shot.
That's it. And I think the biggest thing I always like to do, and I don't know if other people do this, but whether I've written to someone or I've been in the running for something, even when they've sent back the it's not this time, I always like to just send them a message saying, do you know what? Thanks for taking the time. I'm here if you ever need me. Let's stay in touch. See you out on the scene and just keep it. There's no point in holding any. It is frustrating, but it's going to happen a lot. You just have to take it as it comes because for all you know, that person's going to go on their next project. Oh, who was that? I had that. Who was that? And if they you like send something back, oh, you know, no, that was such a waste of time. Yeah, thanks for nothing. They're not going to think of you. And
or if
they
you
do
just
ever think
respond.
Of you,
yeah, that's, just be that's like, what oh, I mean. Asshole.
Just, just stick something in. Just wish them all the best. Because that's, you know, I think when people around you are doing well, when your peers are doing well, that just helps everyone. There's not this myth of when we were growing up that, you know, there's not space for everyone. It's like, you know, you're going to get like cast down by these people. They're better than you. It's just so wrong. And, you know, especially if you get an opportunity, you know, to potentially work with people in the future or work with other peers, it's an incredible thing that can make such a difference to what you're doing.
Oh, that's awesome. So what I want to do, because this has been fucking incredible.
I've loved it. I've been good.
So everybody listening to this is probably just like, oh my God, this is like, you know, holy shit, there's so much going on. But also, you know, the thing is that you're doing, you know, big feature films and you're also diversifying through micro licensing. And the fact is there's money everywhere. It's a growing market everywhere. But something I want to break down, I've been secretly typing.
Oh, okay.
You have like some incredible lessons, just business strategy that you are using that I actually use as well. Not in like a schemey strategy sort of way, just being like a good human and but putting a word on it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm being a good guy. It's working. What is this called?
Yeah, it just does. People respond to that.
Yes. So I want to lay out a couple things. There are six things that I laid out while you were talking.
Oh, okay.
So number one, you created advocates. You were very, very purposeful about creating advocates. You know, when it was your brother-in-law is an actor. You said, hey, you know, if you ever happen to be talking about music, you know, please, you know, this would be really great. But the fact that you actively took an approach versus passive, because something that people fail to understand is, especially in music, people think it's just going to happen at some point.
No, you got to get out of there.
No, yeah, like you have to be purposeful and strategic about creating advocates for yourself. So, for instance, for that pitch, every company that like we work with, you know, make no mistake, I am a fuckboy. I have no idea what I'm doing half the time. But there are specific people and specific companies that, like, you know, in a genuine way, I've just become like, it's not a strategy to save my business. A lot of times, if I'm tight with somebody, a lot of times they don't have the power to, you know, work with us exclusively or not. Or, you know, it's at the end of the day, it always comes down to money. Is value proposition to a company profitable for them? Is it a liability? And as long as we stay profitable, they'll keep working with us. So I'm a nice guy. Like what, as my mother would say, what's not to love? Anyways, but you know, the fact is that I am tight with a bunch of people in these various companies, and, you know, over a long period of time, them having a great experience and getting to know you as a person too, and they know your character personally, like that you will actually follow through. A vouch is the biggest thing you can ask for in the industry, where your reputation, being trustworthy is everything. If somebody vouches for you, it's the biggest thing somebody can do. That's why, like, for our affiliate program, if anybody recommends somebody to join up for that pitch, I personally get on a call with that person because I want to make sure that they are comfortable and, like, you know, we make a good impression because, like, holy shit, you put your reputation on the line for me. Like,
yep.
What a guy, you know? Or so you build advocates, people who want to, you know, help you. Secondly, there's a saying in business, the best way to work with Coca-Cola is to say you're working with Pepsi. So you got your first deal, right?
Yep.
Immediately you leveraged that to get a bigger deal.
Yep.
Because if somebody, at the end of the day, it's human psychology. It's when your ex that you dumped and she was absolutely fucking crazy starts dating somebody else, you kind of miss her.
Yeah, there's a moment where you're like, what if?
Wait a second.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, everybody wants to be at, and yep. All they know is the punch is good. They don't care who's there. If somebody said, oh my God, this punch is amazing, everybody wants to have a sip of it.
Yeah.
You know? And so what you did was very clever. And I've done the same thing in my career with independent stuff. So a big thing that I did is, like, I toured internationally, like, to play with or to produce and then play with artists. So an independent artist wanted me to produce their record. I took the hit and spent over half or like three quarters of the budget so I could fly to them and work. And then I was an internationally touring producer, and people were like, wait a second, maybe he's a bigger deal than he actually is. Mm. Spoiler, I'm still an idiot. But people were like, wow, maybe I'm missing out on something. So I got a lot more people reaching out. And then it compounded. The same thing with our licensing companies. I would work with a big licensing company in the industry. And when I would reach out to another licensing company that we wanted to work with, the first thing that I would say is, hey, we're supplying 100% of the music to your, or to this place, which is their top competitor, which is true, because we are supplying 100% of the music. And they'd be like, wait, what? And then, you know, for instance, it's kind of one of those things where like you want to kind of not, you know, this in film, like you don't want to necessarily mention the company. It's like, so it's just etiquette. There is a, thank you for understanding. There's a company, and I got on the phone with their head of music. And the first thing he said was, you know, Mark, I actually didn't really understand the business model when you're saying that you're paying everything out 100%. I thought like, wait a second, this makes no, I don't get it, but I checked and yeah, you're working with our biggest competitor. So could you explain to me what you do? And that was it. And, you know, now we supply all of their music. So so that's number two, is the best way to work with Coca-Cola is to say you're working with Pepsi. Is, you know, if there is somebody you want to work with in the industry, see who they are, who's competing against them. See if you can somehow make a deal and let them know about it. Another thing you did, you made sure when you were telling your brother, you said, hey, I don't want this to be cringy or anything like this. No pressure.
Yep.
But, you know, if it is a natural thing exactly. to bring up, you know, you genuinely made it so it was in somebody else's court. Like you put the ball in their court and said, hey, this would help me. I do understand that your reputation and you vouching is a big deal. It is no pressure.
That's
but
it.
Put this in the back of your mind if it becomes appropriate.
Yeah, you don't want to it's getting that balance right. It's one thing to like cold email or cold whatever that right. came from you. If you're involving someone else, if you put them on the pressure and you put the pressure on them, then, you know, they might just sneak it in. It might feel awkward. It might not feel awkward.
Right.
And, you know, they've got to feel comfortable vouching for you and saying that, you know, and I'm really pleased that my bro-in-law did.
No, I mean, and that's the thing. Like there are people that I work with in the industry that I fucking love. I could not repay them back enough that, you know, I will make sure whatever it takes that they're incentivized and like they trust us that like, you know, trust me, really. It's all at the end of the day, the pitch team is super small. We automate everything. We do like at this point, like 80,000 automations a month. We automate literally everything. And, you know, it really comes down to like, is somebody going to vouch for us in the building? You know, because if I'm just talking to somebody, it doesn't really, is somebody who also is there is like, oh yeah, I know that pitch. Yeah. They do good things. Like they're a good place. Like I see people getting paid. He's a nice guy. Oh, when he came to town, we went out to lunch and oh my God, you would not believe this story he told like that. You know, it's like, it's just being a good person and making sure that there's no pressure. And that kind of leads for advocating for you. So if you are a producer and artist and you want to get in with a major label, become tight with a bunch of A&Rs and don't ask them for anything. Just become good friends.
Yeah, just let it be natural. You know?
And then two more things I thought was great is you did things for free as a long-term play. When you were at the hotel, and this is kind of a two-parter, you did two things for free. But it wasn't for free. You were actually investing in relations. You weren't doing free shit for people who weren't doing anything. You knew that they were serious. You could spot somebody who was moving in the right direction. You knew like that they had a good future. And you knew that you could plant the seed that at a certain point, when they're in a certain position where they can pay you, they are going to be so grateful to you from earlier on that they're going to do everything they can to make sure that they're going to be advocate for you for more budget. A big connection that I have that I've built is a film director who's done a lot of work with Burberry, Gucci, Nike, Adidas, Puma. And he's a younger dude. And when he first left his fashion corporate gig. It was corporate, but it was in fashion. He went out on his own and, you know, he's scouring up all of his own work and it was a hustle. And, you know, like, he's a good dude and I wanted to see him succeed. And so I would just take him out pretty regularly, you know, for coffee. Hey, what's going on in the business? Oh, that's happening. Okay, let me help with that. So like, it was just being a good person. But like, if you look at it from a business perspective, I was investing in someone for a long term. That's not the motivation behind it. I genuinely want to see him do well because he's a good guy. But, you know, as soon as he started like drumming up a bunch more work, we just landed an Adidas ad through him. We got a Burberry ad. And I'm the first, it's not even that I'm the first call. I'm the only, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just about like, hey, like, you know, it's also like with that pitch, I never increase subscriptions for people when they sign in. You know, for my clients, they always got OG, like they always got the grandfathered price. You know, if you believe me early on, yo, we were doing a track for $600. Well, I'm charging $3,500 for production. You believed in me when I didn't know what the fuck,
yeah,
or even knew less of what the fuck I was doing. So I'm going to keep you at this because thank you. Because it's just the right thing to do.
That's it. You know? And I think, you know, I think there's a lot. It comes up a lot. I'm in a few like music forums and I see the free thing comes up all the time and it causes people go crazy about it. But I think it's situational. If it's something, you know, it is situational. You've got to look at the situation and what, like you said, what are you actually investing in? I think if you're investing in a person as well as yourself, for me, I'm more than happy to, you know, look, I've just done something for someone who's just done a short film. I didn't know actress was in it. She's just come and say, it's a really new director. I've written a song to sing in it. Can you do something about the piano? Because I'm literally just standing holding chords. Can you come up with the piano part? And I'm just like, you know what? It's her. She's going to talk about me on set and to other film directors when she goes to stuff. There's also another great new young director. Do you know what? It doesn't take me that long to arrange a piano part and sit and record that. I'm down for that.
And again, you're never doing something for free. That's that is a very unsophisticated way of looking at it. It is always and only should be an investment.
Investment.
You know, there's a company that I work with she's also in music tech. And when I first got on LinkedIn, I'll mention this because we don't do any licensing stuff with them. She's not a client. But my friend Jessica, she owns this company called Audio Shake, stems for, you know, from AI. It's a really fantastic product. And, you know, when I first got on LinkedIn, my bio might as well have been a fucking Tinder profile. Like, I didn't know the audience. I didn't know how I was supposed to be talking.
Yeah.
And so I DM'd her because I'm green. I know people are here, but I'm willing to put myself out there. And I was like, hey, I love what you're up to, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, when she looked at my bio and because I had this, I mean, that I'm doing that, I'm doing that. I look like I'm not doing anything because I'm saying I'm doing all these different things. You know, it's like, oh, I'm a multi-platinum producer, but I also have that pitch and I also have Clear and I also have that playlist and I also have that management. And I also have my publishing company. It's like, that's what somebody who doesn't make money looks like. If you ever see somebody who in their bio says CEO and, you know, or like the business name has LLC, like on the brand, or like, you know, it's, you know, they're just saying, I do 1,000 different things.
Thanks.
That really tells a lot of people they're not really doing anything. They're just all over the place. And so we got on a call and she's amazing, really, really great person. She let me know. She was like, so what is it that you do? Oh, you should focus on this. Like, this would be really good. And like, you should really like kind of focus what you're saying and put it this way. You'll have a lot more success that way. And I owe her a lot because that's how I met some very, very, not only like, I mean, huge inspirations of mine, but like people that I partnered with on business. And then, you know, I owe her a lot because she helped me make a better first impression. And, you know, we don't work together or anything like that, but this past weekend, I was grabbing lunch with a founder of a massive like private equity firm. And he's just like a nice dude. He's originally from in music and he just built this behemoth of equity growth kind of Charlotte. And, you know, we were talking about music tech and I was like, oh yeah, you know, my friend Jessica runs this. It's really, really cool. And like, who knows if that turns into something, but it was like, the first thing was like, how can I repay this favor?
Yeah.
Cause it's the human thing to do. Unless you're a fucking psychopath you want to see all your friends succeed.
That's it.
And then the last thing I want to put out, which is like, this is really good, is you lost gracefully. You know, when you didn't land something, you didn't look at it as, I lost, I'm a loser, fuck this, fuck them, I'm amazing. You were like, okay, well, they're awesome. I'm not going to take any of this personally. And hey, like, we're still tight. This could lead to something else. And if anything, they're just going to tell everybody that I was such a nice person. That's good.
And that's it. It's like your classic reaction sometimes is to be like, you know, the classic reaction when you're angry about something is to be, this is rubbish. And you're like, well, no, hang on. You just applied to do that because you thought that was really good. So
right.
That's not really a true like reflection. And I think if we start chipping away, like trying to take stuff away from other artists and other creatives, where would we be? There's so much space right now for everyone to create it's and do not, whatever they want.
There is more. When just, people talk about the creator economy, it is not this trend. It is this new economy has literally just appeared. And it really comes from a democratized form of attention, which can happen through art and creating. So before, you had to be in a company owned the distribution that owned how people were viewing the stuff. Now, all of these steps have been democratized that you have access to all of them. So that means that you're all a mini WMG, a mini UMG, a mini SMG, and this Warner Universal Sony. For people who don't understand three-letter acronyms. But like, you know, the fact is that all of this has been democratized. And because I'm assuming why you might have been interested in that pitch is like, you know, it's not like even in film, it's like YouTubers, podcasters, they all need music and they're all underserved and it's a growing market. So they're not going to be the $100,000 deals, but there's hundreds of millions of them, you know, around the world. So if you can get 0.0001% of the market or 0.00001% of the market, you're going to live very well.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, that's what you've got to do. At the end of the day, what I want to do what I love and that's what I want to do. But also, you know, you got to think about, I think, particularly for me as a dad, I'm like, what's the future going to be for the boy? What's my future going to be? Like, I'm happy to write until I can't write anymore. I know that's where I'm going to be now, but you know, this and sync is a whole nother thing. You know, I'm coming to a point now where a load of films and bespoke have stopped. So as well as kind of recharging creative brain, I want to be writing stuff. I want to be looking at what I could be creating for people and getting other stuff out there. And you know, that's just how it wants to be. And you know, the nature of it as well is you kind of have these orphan tracks as well, which I kind of have, like the tracks that didn't make it. You know,
every track on your hard drive should be making you money.
That's it.
And that's it's like, I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable to me the amount of people who complain about there not being any money in music, but all of their music, nobody's ever heard.
Yeah, it's just sat compartmentalized like somewhere.
Right. It's just, it doesn't equate to me because like in my brain, okay, if it's a weird industry we're in because it's very emotional. You know, if you're in the accounting industry or construction, it's not very emotional. It's a very logical industry. We provide the service, we solve this problem, we get paid. But you will never see, so somebody who starts a construction company, you know, they get the lifts, they get the, God, I don't even know these terms. They get the trucks and shit with the big fucking plows on top. Terrible. They buy 1,000 shovels for their work, you know, whatever. They got nails. They bought a bunch of nails. They bought some nails. This is going to be a terrible house, but this is not going to be code. And then they're looking at this. It's in their warehouse. Fuck, there's no money in construction.
Yep.
Like, dude, it's all sitting in your warehouse. Are you using it anywhere? Like, have you reached out to anybody? Like, hey, like, we build things, you know? Like, do you even have a name for this company? I.e., do you have a fucking artist name? Like, are you, like, in every other industry, if someone can really run making a product or something, right? And they don't make money from it, the number one thing they're going to think of is, oh, I really need to learn marketing and advertising. I need to get customers. In our industry, they're not thinking that way. It's like, oh my God, you know, I'm putting in all-nighters making these tracks. Yeah. And like, man, there's no money in music, yet, you know. And then they start talking about Spotify streams. That doesn't. I'm like, man, fuck off. Like, you're an idiot. Like, that is the dumbest way to. This is a massive industry within the art world. It is growing. There's more money to go around, and there's more ease of ability to get your piece of the pie. So, like, if you're not making any money from your music, the only fault is with you, because if there's somebody else doing it, you're the only variant.
You could be doing it as well, yeah.
Get your shit again. That's it. So, anyways, I want to listen to this track that you landed with.
Okay,
us.
Let's do it.
And then I'll probably talk about it for a little bit. More than likely, I will probably give some very, you know, general reason why I think it landed, because I've already listened to it, and it's, you know, solo piano kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's relatively simplistic, and, like, you know, we're kind of, you know, you kind of kept it in the pocket.
Yeah.
And, like, it's generally what it is. I got to get better at my critiques, because when it lands, I'm like, oh, of course it landed. But, like,
I think the biggest barrier to me that I learned from this, from when I first got one, these are my first plays to you guys. I had been with you guys before, wasn't getting anything. And it was because I think the biggest thing that I learned about this side of it is I was massively overcomplicating everything that I was doing. I was just like, okay, these guys are going to want this. We're going to need to slam this in here.
And they don't.
No. Okay. Just like ease up.
Simplify the shit out of it. Make a bunch of simple tracks. And just build it up. It's like, don't be special. All right, well, listen. Let's see if you can actually you'll be able to hear it. All right, here we go.
Okay.
And the track. Let me pull this up. The track name is called "Miss You."
Oh, so yeah, nice.
Let's listen to this bad boy. Here we go. James, that was a great track. I didn't even hear it in here because we had a technical difficulty. Al, thanks for adding that back. You did a great job. It sounded fantastic, James.
Thanks.
all right, so let's wrap this up. A couple things. I want how I end up everything is a piece of advice that you give anybody pursuing music, and then pluggables. Where can people find?
Yes, I think the biggest thing is just be true to yourself, be genuine, and just be a good human. That speaks volumes to everyone, no matter what they do and where they're at in it.
Yeah. You know, we're in an industry where people thought to be here. It's not like, you know, you could, no offense to anybody who works in like more common industries, but like there's some industries where you could literally throw a stick down the street and there's 10 jobs.
There you go. Yeah.
Everybody has fucking ass off to be here. And not only should you just respect that they hustled as much as you did, but also nobody, once they're here, nobody wants to fill up their time being surrounded by assholes. You know? So make sure that everyone is enjoying themselves while they are in this industry for however long they choose to.
And 100%.
It'll be a very great investment of emotional for you because it sucks being an asshole.
Yep. Too much cool. work.
Yeah, too much work. And then lastly, where can people find you online? Any pluggables, view your work or Instagram or whatever?
Yeah, so Instagram at James Cox Music. I do a fair bit on there, and I'm actually working on some reels where I'm going to go behind the scenes of this latest movie I've done called Bigfoot Trap and just talk right from how I landed that job to how we basically scored it and finished it, which will be quite cool because a lot of people have kind of asked about that. So
and, I'm gonna start having you make content for that pitch, dude.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I think it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. The like inner teacher in me again. I think if you can give back, it's another great way of being a human is to just give back. And there's nothing super top secret about what I'm doing. It's just
if anybody is, if you find anybody in the industry that won't tell you 1000% what they are doing, they don't know what they're doing, and they're probably just selling your selling your paid project to somebody else who does know what they're doing. Or they have nothing to hide and they're really insecure because they don't know what the fuck. So there's nothing to, if you break that pitch down, it's just a shitload of people coding stuff that I paid over time. A fuckload of Zapier automations. If you get really good at Zapier, we do like 80,000 of them a month, and a crazy legal software and algorithms I built up to make sure that you didn't steal your fucking music when you upload it. Oh my God. Anyways, that is that pitch. There you go.
Love it. Love it.
And it's behind a paywall. Okay. So, oh God. All right, dude, this is great. Thank you so much.
No worries. It's been so much fun. Thanks for having me.
This is great.